Welcome to Paper Money, the bi-weekly podcast covering the business side of the game industry, from Battle of the Bulge to Borodino, from any war game company to any other war game company. I'm Ben Clark.
And I'm Red Kith.
Yeah, I was looking for bees that we hadn't already done, and everybody's got a Borodino or a Battle of the Bulge game. So it could have been, could have been Decision, could have been GMT, could have been Multiman, could have been, yeah.
So what you're saying is after 30 shows, you're not just fried out.
No, I'm not saying that at all. I'm just saying yeah. So all apologies to all of the companies out there with Battle of the Bulge and Borodino games who did not get mentioned at the start of the show. But I figured after 30 shows, I can go ahead and make a little bit of a joke there.
And you could have used GDW, because how often you get to talk about game designers nowadays?
Zero. I don't. Is Frank Chadwick still alive? I think he is.
Frank, actually, both. Frank is still very active. He's doing a bunch of stuff. Frank's big thing now is he's moved upscale in minis. He's now, I think, gaming in 54s, though the rumor had it might have been as big as 90s. I'm not really sure.
So, yeah.
Frank is still, though, actively.
90 millimeter? What is that, like the G.I. Joe miniature set?
Not quite. Actually, that's about 120, but the answer is big. We're talking action figure size, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. All right, well, let's move on from a discussion of Mr. Frank Chadwick and his extremely large miniatures. Today is July 16th, 2010. Yeah, I finally got that part out, I think.
You did?
Okay, good. I might have gotten it out twice. We're 4 minutes into the show. I'm already terribly confused. Anyways, Rhett, we're in the summer doldrums, but we still have a lot of news happening, and obviously we've like I said, between the two big shows. I know you're compiling our RPG stuff, and we talked about this is going to be our RPG show. I think we're going to save that for next week, or the next show, July 30th, because we're going to be doing a Gen Con preview anyway. And if I recall correctly, all the RPG stuff really is heavily weighted towards Gen Con. Right, it's all going to be coming out at the end of the month.
I was going to say, there was a bunch of really nice releases earlier in the year, but yeah, there's still a ton of stuff that's always targeted around Gen Con. Role-playing in particular has its biggest releases, I'd say, at Gen Con.
Yes, and moving the RPGs to next week's show has nothing at all to do with the hour and 20-minute show I had to edit and cut last week so that I can keep this week's show shorter. Nothing at all to do with that.
I'm glad to hear that. Yeah. And our listeners are glad to hear that. The ones that aren't in a coma from last show.
I'd like to say, by the way, I don't know if you noticed this or not, the show is one of the more popular pieces on the Purple Pawn right now. Yeah. And I don't know if we should just have Randall on the show every week.
It's funny. I get very few comments for people who apparently listen to the show that I know. And then last week after the show, they're coming out of the woodwork to, make comments about, yeah, I heard the show and blah, blah, blah. It was really great.
See, exactly. Yeah, Randall Bills, our secret ratings weapon. We should just put him on during Sweeps Week, maybe.
That's what I was going to just suggest.
So if you're just listening to the show, you're a new listener, you listened to Randall last week. We're not interviewing Randall this week, but we do have a good news show for you. And if speaking of news, why don't we launch right now?
Alrighty.
And, okay, I this is the news here. And I'm going to start with this story just because it was all over the interwebs like a rash. Apparently, in the 1970s, BP released an oil game, a board game about offshore oil drilling. And in it, there's a card that says that you might have an oil spill. And this literally produced, there must have been 20 to 25 articles that I found in my Google search on this particular piece. Folks, it was the 1970s. They had oil spills back then. This was when BP was drilling in the North Sea. So, yes, there's, God forbid, there's a card. It's not ironic. By the way, that would be a total misuse of the term ironic. And It's not foreshadowing. It's not even a coincidence. It's just if you're doing a game about offshore oil drilling, an oil spill card makes sense.
So they don't have a card in there for helping to convince a local government to release a convicted terrorist so that you can get good oil deals in the country he's being released to?
Rhett, I'm up on my energy stuff, but that's a new one, Rhett.
It's on the internet today, and they have admitted to doing that.
Nice. Big business. Gotta love them. I'm sure they don't do anything unethical. Okay, so moving on to other big business, big game business. Warhammer was released July 10th after the last show at $75 for the hardcover, the new rules.
$74.25.
Oh, sorry.
Let's not stretch things.
Yes. At $74.25. Rhett, I haven't seen it yet. The word on the Purple Pawn is that it looks gorgeous. I understand you guys launched it at the store.
I actually was the person in charge of the launch thing here. If anybody knows,
I'll pretend to be shocked.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm also renowned from GW standards for other things. So
I've heard about you at their retailer meetings, but moving on. Is it worth to spend the $75 or wait till the new box set comes out?
Well, you know, it's another 2 months before the box set releases, and the box set will be $90. And the question then comes down to, do you want the toys inside of it? And even with that in mind, it's going to be a cut down version of the rules, which means just the rules section of this book, which is about 100 pages of the, I believe it's 528 page tome.
Now that's a lot of fluff text.
There's a lot of fluff text, but there's also a lot of subset in there which aren't the rules, but are things like the scenarios. They have a huge section on scenarios and campaign type of things, which will be cut out of that basic rule book, which I think people will miss out on if they aren't picking up the big book.
Okay, so as a miniatures gamer, you're saying the big book might be the way to go.
I say it's a pretty strong choice. I was shocked at the number of people who had bought special editions and the special editions were like 120 to close to 200, I think someone was telling me. And still buying the $75 edition, because they thought the rules were that nice and everything else regarding it.
Do you think it's going to be a big jump in Games Workshop sales or just the normal new release bump? The normal new edition bump.
I think it's going to be the normal new edition bump. The big thing I would say that's really different about this set of rules and the newer set of the 40K rules, it shows that Workshop seems to be taking a new direction. The rules are much more complicated than they've been in the past. That's not to say, you know, this is rocket science, but they seem to be changing the age that they believe their target audience is. That they have an older gamer that's a little bit more sophisticated. So let's call them mid-teen as opposed to pre-teen.
Okay. So interesting. I guarantee I'll be taking a look at it. I don't know if it's going to get me back into Warhammer or not, but we'll see. So I haven't really played since third edition. So, but this it sounds appealing, so we'll keep it.
Well, and like the new Champions book that came out earlier, the sixth edition of Champions, this is a great book for a workout.
You know, nothing screams geek like having a game book thicker than your physics textbook with you on the way to class. How would I know? Been there. Anyways, moving on. The real big news this week, by the way, and we kind of put this third just because the other ones we kind of wanted to address and kind of get out of the way. And then you and I can't talk about Warhammer without going long. Alderac Entertainment Group is transferring most of the Dust Games developed properties to Fantasy Flight Games. Now, these include Dust Tactics, City of Thieves, based on the Thieves Guild license, Arcana, and Mad Zeppelin, but not The Adventurers. According to Todd Rowland, AEG's senior brand manager, quote, the combination of all the Dust Games releases, the scheduled AEG releases, and support for Legend of the Five Rings and Thunderstone had us growing faster than planned. The transfer will take place immediately with FFG handling the launch of Dust Tactics and City of Thieves at Gen Con. All right.
Yeah.
This is... Go ahead.
I'm really surprised about this one. Now, we just had a show last week where, you know, Catalyst explained to us the problems of rapid growth, and it seems that AEG is talking in the same terms here.
I find that surprising, though. AEG has always been much more of a business than Catalyst was when it went through its growing pains, right? Catalyst has always, for many, many years, has been a bigger company, largely on the back of Legend of the Five Rings, the CCG.
Well, and I think John Zinsser is a really good business guy. I mean, he's business savvy, which is, like you say, I'm a little surprised over this.
Well,
but
I can
then again, he's business savvy. Maybe he looked at the numbers and said, we can't do it.
I can think of two reasons why they would make this change. Okay, because growing faster than planned, I worked for a whole bunch of IT startups that we would have been seriously happy to grow faster than planned. there are two reasons why you fob stuff off on other people. One is cash flow.
Absolutely, yeah.
As growing faster than planned, with a combination of all these releases, means they couldn't actually support the titles that either the way they wanted or the way they contractually were supposed to. And, you know, that makes complete sense. It's not not having the cash flow to support this level of releases isn't some kind of a death knell. It is, however, a business decision to say, you know what, we've got too much stuff on the plate. The other reason, and I think this, makes sense too, doesn't FFG have a Dust license of some sort?
They have the Dust board game. And I
wonder if they said, you know what, we're looking at something where we've got a lot of stuff. Maybe we pass this over to FFG. They've already got Dust going on. Maybe they can support it better. Maybe there's a licensing thing. But again, I think that those are the two reasons that they would make this move, either licensing or cash flow or combination.
Yeah, I can certainly understand that. I mean, I look at the board games, which like the Adventurers, the Thieves Guild, and Mad Zeppelin, which actually already came out. I was a little surprised, since they seemed to be fitting into the niche that AEG was trying to develop. Losing the Dust Tactics game doesn't surprise me. That may have overwhelmed them. I mean, trying to do the big minis game, Rackham tried the same thing with the pre-painted stuff. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we can talk about Rackham all you'd like. They're currently not releasing anything again.
Does FFG have any big minis games?
Well, they had...
Sorry, it's a little joke there as someone who...
Yeah, and oddly enough, though, FFG already had the experience with the Rackham line.
Right.
You know, and, you know, this... But they haven't done much in the way of a big minis game. I mean, they have... Anima Tactics, is that the correct title?
Well, FFG is doing Tide of Iron, FFG is doing Descent. All of these have huge components of, you know, they're not painted plastic miniatures, but they're plastic miniatures.
Well, but they're also not miniatures games in the sense of every one of those is a board game release with additional expansions that are board game releases.
Spoken like a true minis guy, yeah.
Well, look at the Napoleonic game that they just came out with. They're not trying to come out every month mm-hmm. with a mini, or it's more like quarter, I believe, is their schedule. But
is that the big... $100 one, the massive...
That's the big $100 yeah. one. With, it's beautiful, by the way.
I've seen it. It's insane. Yeah. Folks, if you want to try a Napoleonic game, tactical level, boy, I'd start with that one.
Well, the cool thing is that, like with all FFG games and a number of other companies out there as well, you can read the rules before you actually have to go out and commit to it now. They're online. So, I really like that. Anyway, we're getting way off topic here.
So the question is, again, hopefully I'll get this answered at Gen Con from FFG. Where's FFG got all the money? I mean, they picked up Battlelore last year, right?
I think FFG is about as close to printing money as you can get. They're really well run. Mm-hmm. Their games all seem very successful. They're kind of walking their own path between the Euro games and the historic board games.
FFG is doing really big titles.
Absolutely.
And they're doing a lot of really big titles. So why is it? I mean, in FFG, I've always thought FFG and AEG, I guess FFG is bigger than AEG. But I both thought, in terms of both of them, that they were extremely well-run businesses. Again, John Zinsser, not a guy to bite off too much more than he can chew. Anyways, I was a little surprised to see this, especially, again, Mad Zeppelin and City of Thieves being... well, Mad Zeppelin's already been released, and City of Thieves is coming out at Gen Con, which means that it's already been produced. So, anyways, Dust made sense. The other stuff being developed by Dust Games, I guess, also makes sense in that context. But,
and it may be because this is a division, it's the Dust division, that it may just be a package deal. You couldn't get rid of one without getting rid of all of it.
Yeah, which again, strikes me as maybe it was a licensing thing. But, again, an interesting piece of news for AEG and Fantasy Flight. Fantasy Flight sure to be a little busy at Gen Con this year with all the new stuff they've got coming out.
Yeah, I would say that's a pretty good call there. And, you know, AEG has some really pretty stuff that they just released, too. So,
yes. So they
hopefully this works out well for both of them.
I'm crossing my fingers. There are two companies I have a lot of respect for, and that I'm sure they'll do well by it. And really, Dust Tactics actually looks beautiful. So does The Adventurers, by the way. Those are two games that I've actually been kind of looking forward to. So
yeah,
on a personal note, entirely, I'm not going to recommend, you know, as a business move, everybody go big on these, but I do think they look like a lot of fun. That said, let's talk about games that are not coming out at Gen Con. I want to talk a little bit about Protospiel. Protospiel South was towards the end of May, and then the regular Protospiel, or at least the original one, was this last weekend in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and I had a chance to go over there. Want to thank David Witcher for giving me the chance to speak on Small Run Publishing to a large group of people. And one of the things that amazes me is how quickly, and again, I guess it doesn't feel quick. I think David's been doing this for almost 10 years now, but Protospiel is a big deal in terms of we now have in America not one but two gatherings of game designers. And this was not 10 guys in a small conference room. There were well over 40 people in attendance this year. There was, you know, I was there. I'm going to screw up his name. Sorry. U. Eichert, guy who designed Conflict of Heroes, was there. Will Niebling from Elfin Works was there. And there were a couple of other industry people who were basically talent scouting, looking for new titles. But it's interesting, I think, that this is growing so well. And the reason I say that is that for many, many years, America has been kind of the backwater, as it were, like the soccer world of game design, right? You know, we're really good with role-playing games, and yet it's been Europe that's been leading the board games. And really, Protospiel is very much about board games. And so it was really great for me to go there and see just how much we're developing, I guess, a creative underclass of game designer who's going to these things and sharing ideas.
Yeah, I really like this. I'm very impressed by it. In America's defense, I will mention that we most companies do is create big IPs, you know, as opposed to games. They're developing lines.
We're much better at marketing.
It's the goal.
Yes.
We'll leave it at that. It's the goal. No one wants to do a one-off. Everybody wants to do a, you know, used to be trilogies and the book trade. And now it's, you know, whatever you get up to, 14 books.
Yeah, my son is a big young adult fantasy reader. And one, I'm totally jealous. When I was a kid, after you finished Tolkien, you had to move on to science fiction because there just wasn't a whole lot out there. And two, yeah, if he gets a book series shorter than 7 or 8 books, I'm shocked.
Yeah, I mean, just don't publish those.
Yeah, exactly. But anyways, so Protospiel did very well. And coming out of Protospiel, one of the things that I was talking with Will Niebling about was I am getting, as I do a little bit of print brokering, and one of the things that I'm getting a lot of requests for is the 100 to 500 title game. And that's really difficult to do on an offset press. In fact, here, folks, if you want to print less than 1,000 of a game on an offset press, don't do it. That said, Blue Panther has some news of interest that ties into Protospiel. And I'm going to read the article from the Purple Pawn. Blue Panther is looking for a small game to produce this summer. Rather than simply announcing that it is looking for a small game design this summer, Blue Panther is running a small game design contest in which the winning design or designs will be published. From the wording in the release, it looks like they're committed to publish at least one of the winning entries, regardless of quality. Now, I don't know if anybody knows Steve over at Blue Panther. He used to be based out of Michigan. He's relocated to the West Coast. Steve used to have, and still one of his big things is he's got a laser cutter, right? So him and Lucas over at Dragonfire Laser were the go-to guys to get short-run game-related laser engraving done. But Steve has also acquired a digital press, and he is now one of the few people, I think, who can do a digital run or a digital short run of a game and do it well. So interesting contest. Again, go over to the Blue Panther. BluePantherLLC.com is the thing there, is the URL. Talk to Steve. Read the rules. Submit your design. But again, interesting stuff. The micro game market, I think, is getting some heat. Sorry, that was like a Phil Donahue question. You know, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Okay, all right. Yeah, just going to on and on and on. It came to this, you know, the end of the very end of this question. Anyways, the like I said, Protospiel heating up again. Lots of small time guys there generating creativity. Blue Panther looking to capitalize on that micro game market that I'm seeing, and quite frankly, I can't capitalize on. There's some digital press companies here in the area that I've worked with, but nobody who's got the equipment, I think, to do a great short run game. So should be interesting. Now that said, Rhett, we both know it's really hard to get a micro game into distribution.
Well, almost certainly. And you know what? At the kind of quantities you're talking here, no one's really trying to get it into distribution. I mean, 100 copies doesn't go very far.
True.
I'm not even sure that, you know, it would fill all of Alliance's warehouses for their standard orders.
Well, I guess the question is, does it get you into one of Alliance's sub-distributors?
Not at 100 copies, I don't think so.
I think at 250 you might be.
Yeah, you might possibly get there. It seems to me more or less that this is the type of thing that they're going to use as a promotion as opposed to a sales tool, unless the game is really super in its design. You know, who knows? I mean, we may see that the next Settlers of Catan, having just been designed for this contest, they're going to print tens of thousands of them, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know,
I understand. Nobody's getting rich on this, but I do think it's an excellent fermenting vat, if you will, for new talent, right? In that before, right, we all know Mike Gray, total gamer, he's the gatekeeper for Hasbro. Mike looks at a game and he might love it as a gamer, but he knows that Hasbro's threshold is I gotta sell 500,000 to a million of this.
Yeah.
And so, but then FFG is going to look at a title and go, I need to sell 10,000 of this. You know, some of the smaller game companies are looking at a game saying, I got to sell 5,000 of this. And so, and if it's a new idea, nobody's necessarily willing to break it, to break that idea into the market, because it requires, as you know, too much of your marketing time to sometimes break a new idea, right? It's easier to say, we're going to do a Euro style board game and pigeonhole it rather than to come out with something totally new. So, anyways, interesting. Blue Panther's having a contest for small press design. And Rhett, I'll let you comment on one more thing about Blue Panther if you have anything to say, and then we'll move on to the next story. And the reason I'm doing that is I'm desperately trying to keep the show short. Okay, Rhett doesn't have anything to say about Blue Panther and
I actually, all I was going to say really quickly on it was that this is something that you could take to a convention. 100 copies, 200 copies, take it to a convention, make a big break, liked it, print some more.
Yeah.
You know, we've got a couple of – we've got the show at the
Well, certainly the German shows, right?
It is.
A bunch of is it Spiel that everybody sells their white box stuff?
Yeah.
And so, you know, maybe that's something to do. You take it to Gen Con or whatever, hopefully get noticed by somebody. Again,
take it overseas.
I think it's a neat niche. And honestly, if I were the kind of person who was really ambitious, I would try and compete with Steve for that part of the market. But again, I think it's interesting. And certainly RPGs have gone that way, right? So why not board games? I mean, there's a lot of froth in that small press run, that indie run in the RPG market. By the way, easier to do an indie RPG at 500 copies than it is to do a board game. But yeah, I think there's some interesting stuff going on.
Yeah, I like this one a lot. We'll see how it turns out. I'm sure we'll keep following this.
So, okay, and moving on. This one, the last one I'm throwing in just for fun. Quincy, Illinois, this weekend, July 17th and 18th, is the last qualifying tournament for the National Settlers of Catan competition at Gen Con. So if you're in the Quincy Mall this weekend, down at the place, that's PLYCE, is having the last chance to qualify for the national tournament at Gen Con July 17th and 18th, that's Saturday and Sunday. So qualify for the national settlers competition at Gen Con. Win that, then you get to go to some crazy 11th century castle in Germany to play for the world championship.
You know, if I thought I was good enough, I would give it a try, because going to Germany would be worth the shot.
No, so I feel about Settlers the way I feel about Dominion. I really love the game, but I always come in second. So,
yeah.
So not gonna try. So anyways, that's it for the news this week. I want to thank our sponsors, by the way, the Purple Pawn. All of the news stories except for the Quincy, Illinois Settlers competition have come from the Purple Pawn, and they're doing a great job with game news. They keep it short and sweet. I really can't say enough good stuff about their website, purplepawn.com. Now let's talk about listener mail.
Yeah, we have a listener mail this week.
And it was sent to you. So
it was sent to me. Okay, there we go. A personal piece.
So, Rhett, who was our listener?
Well, the listener this week was Lauren Coleman, the owner, chief bottle washer, et cetera, of Catalyst Game Labs. And his comment was listening to the Purple Pawn. I have to say that sales at Origins are not bad. Our sales were up 12%, and our sales mostly covered the entire show for us, which is a great deal for us as a manufacturer. We see strong sales at Origins, and the $5 shopping pass has been a great boost for us as well. Is it a shopping con? I'd say yes. Worth the trip and plenty to preview and play in the dealer's room itself. So there's more feedback for us on the whole Origins thing, which apparently we got wrong.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say about that. You know, how many times do you see a pundit on television or listen to him on the radio or even on the internets, and they make a prediction that's catastrophically, terribly, awfully wrong? And I want to be the pundit who says, oops.
Yeah.
I blew it on Origins this year. So if sales were up 12% and Origins attendance was only up 5%, the shoppers are back at Origins, and I'd say it's that $5 shopping pass that's really making the difference for them. So kudos to Origins for trying a strategy that I thought was wrong, and I will say it here. I was wrong. I apologize.
Yeah, I really like this one. I'm not sure that we'll ever see it at Gen Con. We've had a discussion with the Gen Con people regarding it, and we've talked about this in earlier shows. But, you know, at least from the Gamma standpoint, where Gamma, who is the Origins sponsors or runners or whatever terminology I should be using for that. The idea of promoting the industry as opposed to the show, this goes a long way, and I'm really glad to see it works.
Yes, and I think it's interesting that they're developing the local market in Columbus, and I think that's a good strategy. Certainly, a show like Gen Con is a national show that happens to be in Indianapolis.
Absolutely.
It's. I won't say that nobody shows up locally on, say, Saturday to check out the show, but it's really the kind of show where you go and stay, right? You're there for 4 days half the time, or you're there for 2 days and you're from out of town. So Origin's doing something interesting, and it seems to be working. I'm glad. I have been worried about that show for ages. I'm going to stop worrying about it. Sounds like they're on the right path. And by the way, before I let go of the mic, I talked to Will Niebling about this at Origins, and he credits all of it to, forget his last name, John, the new director over at Gamma. And he says that when they interviewed this guy, he was the only candidate to walk into the room with a plan already in hand. And so really impressed the folks at Gamma. And has really obviously doing something to get Origins and Gamma back onto the map. So that was cool to hear. Again, I'd forgotten about that, but yeah, I talked to, when I was talking to Will at Protospiel, it was one of the things we talked about. So, and he credits, I think, I want to say John Coleman, and I apologize for, if I'd thought about it before the show, I would have gone to the Gamma website and looked it up, but, we had him on the show last year too, which is so embarrassing.
I know.
But anyways, he credits, that's where he's crediting the revitalization on the game, on the Origin show. All right, now I'm done.
All right.
Okay. All right. So, that said, Rhett,
if you'd like to contribute to our listener mail, we'd love to hear your feedback and comments. Any questions you have as well, you can reach us at our email at papermoney@purplepawn.com. Hey, I got it right this week.
Yay.
Skype us at Paper Money Podcast, or phone us at 773-634-9377.
And I want to remind people again that there is an RSS feed specifically for Paper Money, so you don't have to go through all of the Purple Pawn news stories. It's just the Paper Money stuff, and that's at purplepawn.com/category/papermoney/feed. Yay. All right, and this would be the part of the show where we do interview or commentary, and Rhett,
we're avoiding that this week because we're trying to keep a short show.
That's right. That's absolutely right. We're trying to do a short show after our mammoth show last week. And I know it's going to be a long show next week, right? I mean, that's really what it comes down to.
Yeah, with Gen Con, is, you know, with a preview of Gen Con and the whole RPG thing that we've got going, I would like to be done, let's say, before we go to Gen Con.
And by the way, we're still at 33 minutes, so about 10 minutes over where I wanted to be for this week's show anyway. Anyways, our upcoming stuff, Rhett, what are we going to talk about next week?
Well, summer releases, all those exciting things as we see coming up for Gen Con and shortly thereafter.
Yeah, I heard FFG is going to be releasing City of Thieves.
I heard I heard that. I also understand that they're working on Dust Tactics too now.
Yeah. Anyways, our next show is going to be...
July. It is not going to be July 16th. It is going to be July 30th.
That's right.
And our focus will be on RPGs.
Yes, our belated focus will be on RPGs with Gen Con coming up. Or we'll just ramble for 30 minutes like this week.
Well, it's a Gen Con preview as well.
Yes. And for the record, everyone who's interested in such things, yes, Red and I will both be at Gen Con this year. I think we're both working this year at Gen Con. There was some doubt that I might be off the clock. And then, for the record, I got my hotel moved from the Omni to the Hyatt. Thank God.
I like the Hyatt, but there's nothing wrong with the Omni. At least
the Omni's a great hotel. I stayed there a few years ago, but I'll be blunt. My food is generally not paid for at the show, so I eat at the food court, and the Hyatt is on the way to the food court.
I'll give you that. You know, if you're looking for places to stay, there's all sorts of strategies involved in it. I know that there's a lot of people who like the Western who work in the hall because you only have to walk about half as far as the next nearest hotel.
Yeah, the Western's good, too. The Hyatt, though, you'd be surprised who I bump into coming in and out of the Hyatt, though. I've actually made deals on the portico at the Hyatt.
It's the main traffic.
Yeah.
Everybody walks through the Hyatt.
So.
I won't say where my favorite hotel is, but it's near my favorite bar, and we'll end with that.
Well, that's it for this show.
That's all. I'm Red Kipp.
And I'm Ben Clark.